Hello, this is Dan Le Batard. Welcome to South Beach Sessions. We hope that you are rating, subscribing, and reviewing all the things in the Le Batard and Friends Network, all of it meant to be menu items. Also, want to help our friend Bomani Jones. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is an excellent podcast. You really should check it out. His perspective is different. There are very few people at the trough of sports opinion giving you different sports opinions, and he's one of them. So The Right Time with Bomani Jones is something you want to listen to. It's a little bit younger than what we're about to present to you right now, which is John Tesh. He's in his 60s, and in my time growing up, this was a man who was a bit of a superstar. Like, not only was he someone who was on Entertainment Tonight at a different time in television, a different time in paparazzi and fame and celebrity, he was a big star who was also making music that you're going to hear and recognize in a couple of seconds. But what breaks out here, and I don't want to spoil too much of it, what breaks out here is a stunning beef he reveals, because John Tesh is a religious man, he's a kind man. I don't think of him as having beef with anybody, but the beef breaks out, and all of a sudden Pat Sajak calls in, but the beef's not with Pat Sajak. Pat Sajak is going to call in, but there is no beef with Pat Sajak. It's another 60-plus year old that the beef starts with. Regardless, it's a big surprise. You're going to want to stick around for it, even if you're not interested in John Tesh. Before we get to that, though, Mike Ryan's got to tell you about who's sponsoring this week's South Beach Session.
Dan, South Beach Sessions is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast. From healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find the right people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listings so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, our listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEACH. ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And Dan, I would be remiss to not mention, have you checked out The Right Time with Bomani Jones on podcast?
Yeah, it's great. It's different.
It's so good that I'm promoting it even though it's not a part of Le Batard and Friends.
That's how good it is.
That's how good it is.
You're normally a lackey, a shill for Le Batard and Friends.
I feel
you're going outside of your normal shilldom.
I'm moved. I'm moved to tell you to check this out. Every week, subscribe, rate, review. Do you leave reviews for other podcasts you enjoy?
I do not.
You're a writer. You should do it.
I give you my opinions here.
You know who leaves it all the time on like all my podcasts is Mina Kimes' mom. She's a big supporter of ours.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, she champions my cause personally, too. I'm flattered.
That's not interesting.
It's random, though. Almost as random as interviewing John Tesh in the year 2020.
Pretty random.
Look at you throwing stones from your glass house. Keep up with this podcast shit.
All right, we continue with this podcast shit. We will not have a South Beach session next week, taking a week off, but we'll be back after that. We've already got some good interviews lined up for you. Here's John Tesh. John Tesh has lived a big life. He has lived. He has also almost died. He lived in a while in a tent for 4 months because he was chasing his dreams. I know Mike and I are both very excited about talking to John Tesh because he created the NBC basketball theme, Round Ball Rock. Do you have that available, Mike? I know I can't play this stuff on podcasts, and there are all sorts of...
Dan, there's all sorts of rights fees, and even though we have the artist there, all I can do is go, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Okay, that's great. That's the height of entertainment. This man has lived at the height of entertainment, and that's the best we can do as a production vehicle is you singing his Round Ball Rock song.
Boom, 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 boom.
All right. It's one of the most memorable sports themes of all time. And as well, like I said, he was at the center of celebrity at a really fun, wonderful, and cheesy time in celebrity. So with all of that as backstory, John Tesh, thank you for being on South Beach Sessions with us. Where did it start? Like, what did you want to do when you, right before you were living in that tent?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And I should tell you that the you singing the theme is how the theme was written. That's how I sang it into my answering machine. The other thing is that we own the publishing and all the rights. So if somewhere down the line you want to play it, it's fine with me. You have my permission.
All right. Well, hold on a second. No, actually, thank you, John, because this is a terrible thing that we have encountered as a show for a long time where we never have any permission. So thank you.
From us, it's fine.
This is great. We feel so strong. We have finally gotten the rights to some music. Mike Ryan, let's go. Bang that shit.
Come on, Dan.
It's so good.
Hey, boy, John.
Go ahead, John.
If you listen to that theme closely, that's the original. Actually, it's been recorded several times. But if you listen to that closely, you can hear mixed a little too loud is bongos. I don't know what it was, but we were in the recording studio, and it was like we said, "Wow, it's got some good action, but it needs something." And so somebody said, "What about bongos?" And so I went in to the studio, and we didn't have a percussionist with. I actually played bongos. So that's what you hear in there. I think it gives it a lot of energy.
What can you tell us about the making of that? Like, what can you tell us about what you thought it was going to be, and the idea that I am, how many years later, asking you about it?
Yeah, 1990. I was in a place called Megève, France. I was covering a bike race for CBS Sports, and I had heard that NBC was looking for a theme for their basketball coverage. And I tell this story every night in concert. That's where we are right now, by the way. So I apologize for the background noise. We're in a van with the band on the way to another venue in Florida. But and when people hear the story, they're like, well, I want to start singing into my answering machine as well. But in 1990, I'd heard that the NBC was looking for a new theme, and I was working for sports, right? So it sort of comes to the grapevine that that's what's happening. And having written a lot of sports music, certainly for the Tour de France and a lot of other big events, including, you know, tennis, downhill skiing, and all that stuff, a lot of themes. I mean, even though I knew what worked and what it sounded like, and what the format should be, as in how long things should be and all that. You had to come up with an idea for a catchy theme. And so in the middle of the night, I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, as the story goes, and, I had this idea in my head, and it was the melody that you just played, but I had no way to write it down. I didn't have any manuscripts of paper with me, and I probably wouldn't have even helped get the feel for it. But certainly no smartphones back then, and I didn't have a portable tape recorder. So I just called my answering machine, which was back in the States in New York, and I left a message for myself, basically like what you guys were doing. You know, kink, 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 and I still have the answering machine message. And it's really exactly, even tempo-wise, what the theme ended up being on NBC.
This is so exciting that we have the power to just play that again and again. So this is how that became that. Listen to this. Yes. It's so big. It's just big. What were you going for there, John? When you're like, I'm going to do this into my answering machine, you're saying to yourself, I'm just going to make it sports over the top big.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to remember, too, this. If I had just sent in the answering machine message to Dick Ebersol at NBC Sports, it probably would have been what? And I have been in front of a lot of, you know, commercial producers and worked a lot with sports producers, knowing that if you're not a musician, right, and if you haven't, you don't have the experience to hear forward, so to speak, you really have, if you're going to do a demo. And Hans Zimmer was really one of the first people to do this with movie themes, where he would hand in a spec score to Ridley Scott almost fully formed, you know, with all the synthesizers and everything. That's what I did. I mean, what I handed to NBC is what you just heard. I mean, that we didn't go back in and re-record it. So I sent it to them at a tempo that I tracked the fast breaks of Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, and came up with an average tempo rate of 132 beats per minute, which is about 10 beats per minute faster than a disco song like Donna Summer. And so, you know, there was that. And when we mixed the song, we actually mixed it to highlights from a Lakers game on VHS tape, just to see, you know, how it moved. And then I in the original demo that I sent, we did a separate mix where I did the announce sort of pretending to be Marv Albert. And so they could hear what a voice, because what you have to do is you have to do a fanfare, then you do a theme, and then you break the song down and you remove the brass and just have strings and the rhythm section so that they can say, you know, brought today, it's the Los Angeles Lakers versus the San Antonio Spurs. That was actually the very first game it played on. And leave room for the voice, right? So leave that frequency free. So it's not only a strategy of coming up with a melody, a theme that people can sing back to you, but it's also technical, and you need to hear it fully formed so they can say, "Oh, this is how we can use it."
Listen to me. This song, this shit still slaps.
It still slaps, Dan.
It still slaps.
John, you know this shit still slaps.
This is so good.
I know you are so much more than just round ball rock, but we're sports guys. And to us, this is basically Yesterday by the Beatles.
Yes, you know this, right? Though you get a lot of people like us doing this annoying thing where we're really wearing you out on something that perhaps you're tired of being asked about.
Not really. I mean, and we'll play it tonight, you know, and when we play it, we play it on a screen. I mean, it's synchronized to all of the great highlight films, sports highlight films, basketball highlight films from the 90s, right? 90s and 2000, which is like, I mean, it's, you know, 24 feet high behind us. And so, and before we do that, if you search YouTube for Round Ball Rock or my name, whatever, in basketball, there are literally hundreds of videos on there and we play several of them before we play the song on stage. People playing this, people teaching you how to play the song on guitar, people playing it on ukulele, Casios, people all over the world, people from India, from Kazakhstan playing their instruments. And so we never thought that this little song would do that, but I think it was the combination of it being released at a time when, as my son Gibbs says, you know, it was a real seminal time in the world of basketball, where people, I mean, the ratings were huge. I mean, a funny story, when I wrote this song and Ebersol said, "Hey, this is great for us." And then I was on the road doing something else, and I knew it was the debut of the theme, and it was the debut contest. And this is actually in my book, Relentless, a very detailed account of how the song was written, and a detailed account of how, you know, live at Red Rocks and also the Tour de France music was all created. But I went into a sports bar knowing that at 4 o'clock in the afternoon it was going to be the Los Angeles Lakers versus the San Antonio team, and so I was sitting there, and there's like maybe 50 people in this bar with TVs everywhere, and when it comes time, you know, the animation comes out, you know. There's another fanfare that goes, and then the theme comes on, and it's just blasting through the bar, and I'm smiling, you know, and people are watching, and I'm thinking, and somehow I'm just thinking that they must know that this is mine, which of course they didn't. So after a while, nobody's saying anything. I motion over to the bartender, and I said, "Hey, you hear that music?" He goes, "No, I hadn't noticed." I said, "The music that's playing, you know, because they're going to commercial." He goes, "I'm sorry, man, I'm just really busy. Do you want another beer?" You know, it occurred to me that I probably needed a little larger feeling of humility in there. But I was, I was a stranger in a strange land, listening to something that was remarkable and had never happened to me in my life.
His new book, Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith, is available now wherever books are sold. I need John Tesh to officially and publicly declare that shit still slaps.
Yes, I would say the theme still slaps.
Okay, very good. I know you're a man of faith, but that is still good. And so you're telling us that Riley's Showtime Lakers of Magic Johnson and Kareem and Worthy were the inspiration?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. And you know, when I was in the recording studio mixing this with another guy, we knew there was something wrong with the theme, and it was nice, but it was slow. And so that second step was to get a and this, again, this is back with, you know, 3/4-inch tape and VHS tape. There was really no digital anything to speak of. And I had some friends of mine bring over VHS highlights, and we had an editor edit the highlights and then play the music, sync the music to it. And that's when the editor said, "You need to increase the tempo by 10 beats a minute." Now, 10 beats a minute is a big change. Right. And at that moment, it was, you could tell that this was the way the song was meant to be listened to.
I don't mean to bury this poor guy, but we love it that much, and now we have the power to continually play it. So I'd like to break up everything we're doing with John Tesh with occasionally playing This Shit Still Slaps.
You know, it's not just the song. It's on YouTube. If you look up Round Ball Rock, you get amazing video from, was it Red Rocks, a PBS special, something, where John is decked out in the
flyest gear. Well, that's the thing. I want to talk about your style, too, and just all of it, because it is wonderful in terms of you are at the height of celebrity, but I need to know how much money you made for that song. Like, did you make good money off of that, or did you get ripped off?
No, in fact, NBC got ripped off, sadly for them, is because, you know, it's very important for a network, especially a sports network, to own the publishing on a song so that they have control over it, right? So nobody else can use it. For example, the, you know, NCAA basketball is now playing the team. We had offered it to ABC, but they wanted to distance themselves from NBC. I totally understand that. But if you don't own the publishing, then you don't have control over it. And a clerical error happened when they started playing the theme, and they never got the publishing. So the publishing is ours. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly during the season, it can be worth. And, you know, back in the day when they played it even more, it can support you. Let's put it.
Well, hold on a second, if I may, and I don't mean to be indelicate here, because that was not the answer I was expecting. The answer is marvelous. You have brought in deserved buku dollars, because I just heard it the other day on some Big East telecast on FS1. Like, people have to pay you. What does that transaction look like, if you would, just so that people understand that transaction right there, a tiny little invasive Big East transaction. That lines John Tesh's pockets directly?
What happens is the networks, they have a BMI and an ASCAP license, and so they pay a monthly fee, and then it's a pool of money. And so depending on how many times your song gets played, then that factors in. So it can be all over the place. And if it plays at a certain time, it plays in prime time or it plays in afternoons, and it's a very complicated process.
Well, at the height of money-making with that song, where was it? Where was the height of it?
I'm not telling you that.
Okay, very good. I did. I got too invasive.
John Tesh. Ask him about some other things.
You know, Ted Koppel and Mike Wallace are people that I know, so I understand a question I shouldn't answer.
Okay, because John Tesh has had a rich career. Rich. Like, and I don't want to talk about money anymore. I want to talk about how you got to where it is that you got. So you get how much support from your parents that ends up with you living in a tent for 4 months?
Well, I mean, thankfully, my father was a man of honor, and if he hadn't acted honorably and with great punishment, I probably would be doing something else. I grew up as a musician and played trumpet and piano and studied with some pretty heavyweight teachers classical music when I was a kid, and so it was pretty clear. I mean, if you asked anybody, they would say he's probably headed for USC or something. I actually had a partial scholarship at Kansas State for music and performance, but when it came time to do the college visits as a junior in high school, I announced to my dad those are my intentions, and he said, well, no, I've already made plans for you to study textile chemistry at North Carolina State. He was one of the vice presidents of Hanes Underwear. And so, yeah, he wanted me to follow in the underwear legacy. And I lasted at State for, I played some soccer and I played some lacrosse. And I was a high jumper at Garden City High on Long Island. And I walked onto both the soccer and the lacrosse teams. And that was really the only thing that kept me alive, because I was so miserable doing textile chemistry. But then I walked into a radio and television course to try and raise my GPA. I heard it was an easy A, and I got bit by that media bug, and I realized I needed to change my major without talking to my parents. And when I attempted that, one of my professors would not sign the drop ad card to let me out, and so I would have had to wait another year. And so I did what one of my fraternity brothers suggested, and I signed the professor's name to the drop ad card, basically forgery. And I got caught, and the university suspended me. They said I broke the honor code, which I did, and then they gave me an F for the course. And then my dad, after he got the letter from the chancellor of the university, he was shamed by all of this, and he kicked me out of the house indefinitely. And so I ended up in a pump tent in a park working construction and pumping gas. So that was 1973.
That story's a bit crazy. I guess some part of you appreciates the discipline?
Not then, I didn't, because I was miserable. I mean, I've been thrown out of school, my parents threw me out of the house, my girlfriend broke up with me, nobody would talk to me, and I'm hanging out with guys and chewing tobacco, and I'm thinking this is going to be the rest of my life. You know, at a certain point, I stopped feeling sorry for myself, and had a friend of mine help me break into the campus radio station, and because I liked the radio TV stuff, having had a brief introduction to it, I made a demo tape. We're using a little upright piano they had and a typewriter to do the teletype stuff and sort of silly sounds with my helicopter sounds with my voice and produced this crazy demo tape that got somebody's attention at WKIX radio, which was Rick D's station at the time. And so I got a job basically, you know, sweeping the floors and running the religious tapes on Sundays from 4 to 7 in the morning. And, you know, what happens, right? You get your toe in the door. Somebody leaves, somebody gets promoted, and the short story is things just really lined up for me with persistence and grit and a lot of faith in all of this, and really not having a choice, right, because I burned my shifts. And in 3 years' time, I was in the news at WCBS-TV in New York at 23 years old. So it was just a lightning-fast movement that when I looked back at it, I was like, I have no idea how this happened. But when you see it detailed in the book, it's pretty remarkable.
Help me understand something here, because I imagine a lot of people listening to this are too young to remember the career that you kind of had in the middle around being a musician. And to explain this to the audience is going to be a little difficult because this is all pre-internet, and I don't feel like we had that much cable. So you're basically hosting a national entertainment show that was wildly successful because people didn't have access to that the way they do now. So what can you tell me about the time around Entertainment Tonight? It's hard to explain how successful that show was because there were so few options, right?
Yeah, and it's really crazy because just the other day, I reunited with Mary Hart and did an interview with me for the Relentless book, and we reunited on the show 24 years. I hadn't seen her for 24 years, 24 years since I left to go perform at Red Rocks. And it's very different, but there were a lot of things that were still the same. We still had that same chemistry. The wild thing for me is that I started at 19 and a half years old in the TV radio, and then in the TV business in Raleigh and Orlando, and then Nashville, where I was working at a station with Pat Sajak and Oprah Winfrey, and then on to New York City at CBS. And to my left was John Stossel, to my right was Meredith Vieira, behind us was Brian Williams and Bill O'Reilly, and these were the halcyon days of news, where we weren't even shooting digital; we were shooting film, at that time. And then Gary O'Neill and Van Gordon Slaughter hired me out of the CBS newsroom to go do network sports. And so I basically spent the next 6-7 years living in Europe, covering the Tour de France bike race, downhill skiing, all the anthology sports. I saw the Jim McKay sports because CBS.
The big sports, the sports that John Tesh should be involved with, the big stuff.
Well, but what's really odd is that, you guys will love this, is that, when I got the call from Terry O'Neill saying he'd like to hire me to do that, I said, listen, I have to be honest with you, I can't name 3 NBA teams, I don't even know the rules of tennis, that kind of thing. He goes, I wouldn't worry about that. He says, we've seen your live stuff, and we think you'd be good for this. Some other things that were very nice, like we like your voice and things. But she said, the sports that we'll send you on, nobody knows the rules to anyway. And he was right. It was the Ironman triathlon, Tour de France bike race, where the rules are very complicated and unusual. A lot of the Olympic events, gymnastics, figure skating, swimming and diving, track and field. And so that was a massive education for me. Those people who are sports fans probably already know this, but I can tell you from doing entertainment news and certainly doing a lot of hard news and then doing sporting events that I would stack up a sportscaster, whether it's Al Michaels or Brent Musburger or even Joe Buck or
Bob Costas. I'd say Bob Costas is as good at broadcasting as anyone is.
I'm not a fan. No, sorry. Bob Costas was incredibly rude to me on national television. He ended up apologizing, but I just, he's not on my list. I mean, I forgive him, but he said some nasty stuff about me, and it was not necessary. So I think if you concentrate on Al Michaels and people and Brett Musburger, I've never seen anybody be able to perform like that. Anyway, what I was trying to say is, I know you'll get back to that thing, but I'm going to keep going. What I'm going to say is that what I learned from not only being an announcer on sports, but also being a composer and a writer for things like the Tour de France, I've never done anything in my life, even to this day, as difficult as those things on the Tour de France. Everything that I learned there, I ended up carrying with me, even my concert I'm going to do tonight. Is all those.
I hope first that you forgive my ignorance, because I was not saying Bob Costas to badger you. I don't know what this history is that you speak of. I just think that Bob Costas is very polished as a television personality. So forgive my innocent ignorance on that subject. But I love how you're so savvy as a media member that you said in the middle of your story, you said, I know you're going to go back again and ask me about Costas, but I'm going to finish this whether you want to ask me about it or not. How did you know? Because yes, I perked up, but I was also a little bit ashamed because I don't know the history and we've already badgered you with the song a couple of times. So I didn't want to insult you by making you think that I was shock jocking by like saying the nice Costas thing.
Oh, no. It's fine. And there's no badgering at all. I mean, my whole life, at least the last part of my life after I survived a terminal cancer diagnosis, is just to be truthful. And this is no surprise to everyone. Listen, it's inside baseball for sure. But Costas was not a fan of me, and he wasn't the only one. I got made fun of by a lot of the late night hosts because I was very dramatic. And this is important to know, is that when I went to do gymnastics, there were people as an announcer, right, for the Olympics in 92 and 96. There were not a few people in the business who thought I was a carpetbagger. They didn't realize that, for 6 years hence, and here's why, because when I was covering the games in both those years, I was still working for Entertainment Tonight, right? I had left sports. And so Dick Ebersole hired me as the announcer for gymnastics with and water polo and stuff like that, with Dave Michaels producing, because we were a great team. That was the team that was together on the Tour de France. But prior to that, I had done every national championship and the world championships and also all the World Cups, gymnastics competitions with Tim Daggett and Elfie Schlegel and all those guys, and I'd worked figure skating with Scotty Hamilton. So I knew a lot about gymnastics. I knew a lot about the ins and outs of doing interviews and broadcasting it. But all of a sudden, when the host of Entertainment Tonight shows up, right, doing the Olympics, like, what's this guy doing here? And so Bob Costas, I'm sure he's a fine man, but when he, after the, there was a lot of talk about how dramatic I was, overly dramatic I was on the games. And encouragement came from Dick Ebersole, who said, listen, I love your commentary. Every night he'd be calling me in the broadcast center just saying, keep it up, don't read the newspapers. He said, our ratings are through the roof, people are loving this. Because I got really involved in it, and I was that dramatic doing the Tour de France, too. And I don't think I would have changed it. Bob, that's not his style. And so he made, he apologized, and I think that's great. But he went on the Tonight Show and said, and Jay Leno said, hey, Bob, a lot of people said this stuff about John Tesh, about how terrible he was at the Olympics. What do you think? And Costas, who had obviously rehearsed this line, said, as a sports announcer, I think John Tesh is a good piano player. And it's like if I said something like about Mary Hart or something, after we were working together. It was, when you're on it, whether you like the guy or not, I mean, let's think, think Kobe and Shaq or something, right? You're on the same team, and you got to really watch your mouth when you're on the same team, whether you like the person or not, because I never did anything to hurt Costas, and it damaged my reputation. And he ended up writing me a letter afterwards after he got beat up about it.
Watch your mouth, Bob Costas, is not something I expected to hear during a conversation with John Tesh. Honest to God, John, I am stunned. You're a very nice man. You're just a nice man. Your book, Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith, is available whenever books are sold. You're trying to live your life the right way. The idea that you would have beef with Bob Costas is shocking to me.
I don't know. You can ask some other people, maybe. Who knows? You know?
But are you someone who beefs? I guess I would ask you, it begs the follow-up question of how many other beefs do you have? Because I don't imagine John Tesh is a beefer. I imagine John Tesh is somebody who's wandering around life doing whatever the hell he wants to do, making music and enjoying the hell out of being John Tesh.
Well, listen, let's go scriptural, right? So if you're in Mark 11:23, in the Bible, which is the scripture that my family has tattooed on their arms, and the scripture that got me healed of cancer ultimately, after all the surgeries, it's whoever says to this mountain, be removed and be cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will be done, shall have what he says, meaning you can speak life in Jesus' name, you can speak life over yourself. The rest of that scripture is down below, like Mark 11:25, is if you have anything against someone, you need to forgive them, otherwise you don't get any of this. So I have great forgiveness for Bob Costas and anybody else who's wrong. You know, I would hope people would have the same for me. But you brought his name up, so I just wanted to tell you the story. But I love Bob Costas, and I think he's an incredibly talented guy. But I still pick Brett Musburger and Al Michaels over him.
It's one of the reasons, though, because you're a man of God, because I know a little bit about your life, it's one of the reasons I was surprised to have you come so strong at Bob Costas. But we've arrived at a place of healing and forgiveness. And you mentioned the life-altering and life-saving events of your cancer treatment. I imagine that however spiritual you were before that, you became all the more spiritual after that, because it reinforces the faith that you've carried all your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's faith is wonderful. It's great. But if you have unbelief, then it's like two horses pulling in, you know, chained together, pulling in opposite directions. And that was one of the things that happened to me, is that when the cancer came upon me, yeah, I'd grown up with faith in God. But there are scriptures in the Bible that a lot of churches don't teach for one reason or another. But I mentioned one of them, Mark 11:23. The other is Proverbs 18:21, which is death and life are in the power of the tongue. And then the third John, which says that, basically God wants you well. And so there are plenty of people who think that God puts sickness on people to teach them a lesson or to give them a testimony or something. And it's just not true. It's nowhere in the New Testament. So I always had faith, but until I was faced with the, I didn't have anything left. The last treatment that they wanted to do on me was radiation. It would have wiped out my, most of the function in my pelvic area, including my bladder and bowel function. And they go through the whole list of all that stuff because they wanted to carpet bomb all of the lymph nodes in that area. But when that's a
horrible phrase, by the way. That what you just said,
carpet bombing.
Carpet bomb all the lymph nodes in that area is a horrific phrase.
Right. Yeah. Well, I didn't have it done, and at the moment we were in the doctor's office with the radiation oncologist, and when he started going through the list, my wife and I had been at that point, we had been studying these scriptures that had gotten other people that we knew healed, and we had a look almost like the look that Leonidas and his queen had as the Persian messenger was trying to enslave them. Had that eyebrow look, and faith was born, and I was done. And not only was I healed of cancer, I was healed of arthritis from broken ankles over the years, and that's listen, titrated in this book, Relentless, is that story. My buddy Bob Costas is not mentioned, but it's okay. There's other great stories in the book as well. Let's forgive Bob Costas together, shall we? Because hey, listen, he did write me a letter, and I thought there was a pressure that he came upon for that, but it was a very nice letter.
Let's go ahead and do that to the sound of this John Tesh song. I want to forgive. Help me out with this, Mike Ryan. Let's do it.
I forgive Bob Costas. I know you're really, really, really sorry.
That's very nice. I love the lyrics.
I thank you for giving us, sight unseen, you don't know us, the rights to play that song. Can we have them forever? Like, can we play it?
I don't really know if this is legally binding.
Can we play it? Is it legal? I hope it's legally binding. This podcast is going to be weird.
You can play it. Just give it a credit every now and then. It's fine. You guys are great.
Is he going to sue us? Is he going to sue us?
Please don't sue us, John Tesh.
Because when this becomes news, because John Tesh feuds with Bob Costas, you know that's going to happen,
just
John.
Just know that this is Exhibit A.
You come from Entertainment Tonight. You know that this is going to happen.
You know what? You know what? Why don't the two of us get on the podcast together? I would love to do that. That would be fun.
Mike, call Bob Costas right now and call him right now.
I have his number here.
I have his number. If John Tesh actually wants to talk to him, we can have a moment of healing.
Tell him I'd like to reconcile with him and I'd like to laugh about that. All
okay.
Right?
You know what? We're going to do this right now. I'm going to give you. Come in here and get Costas.
Just shoot him
number.
A quick text and I'll handle the rest there, Dan.
Okay.
Do you need some waiting music?
I do need some waiting music. Hold on just a second, John. All right. Just hold on just for a second. Okay. Forgive me. But I did want to talk to you a little more while we wait to see if we can get a hold of Bob Costas. I wanted to talk to you about the days of Entertainment Tonight and sort of explaining to people how long was that and explaining to people in real terms the success of that show, like just the idea of there was nothing like it before, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was on there for 10 years and I was out working on sports and I got a call from Paramount Television saying that they had they found an old tape of mine anchoring the news in Nashville with Sajak doing the weather, and they were looking for a newsier approach to ET. And Mary had been on there for maybe a couple of years. I hadn't seen the show. This was in 1985, end of 85. At that moment, it was really wild because a guy named Peter Lund was president of the new president of CBS Sports, and he sort of cleaned house. And he called me into his office, you know, and this is in the book, and he said, listen, I just want you to know, I think you're a nice guy and all, but we're not going to do as many of the anthology events that you've been on. We're not going to renew the rights to the Tour de France. We're not going to do as much of the, the downhill ski racing and all that. We're going to try and buy more baseball and football and basketball and all this. And so he really did me a favor because when the audition came through and eventually the offer for Entertainment Tonight, I mean, probably in 6 months, I would have been let go at CBS Sports. So it was really a Hail Mary for me.
Do you have any relationship with Pat Sajak? Because I can call him, too, and text him real quick if you want to talk to Pat Sajak. We're good friends with him. He's a friend of the show.
Yeah, I love Sajak. Yeah. I mean, Sajak was great. We worked together well at WSM in Nashville. In fact, Vanna's kids learned to swim in my pool, so we're all very good friends.
All right, Dan, text Pat Sajak.
All right, yes, come in here. Give me the hold music. Let me text him real quick. Give me the music on hold here.
You guys don't have their phone.
No, you think we're fooling around? No, in fact, I'm going to FaceTime him. Hold on a second. Let me just, you think I don't have, hopefully he'll answer the FaceTime.
Please hold music.
Hold on
John
a second.
Tash,
hold
Dan.
On. Hold
Face
on.
Times, Pat
he think,
Sajak
he thinks
right
we're
now.
Pulling his leg. We're not, he was invited to my wedding. He didn't come.
He didn't.
He got terribly sick. That's why he couldn't come.
Yeah, but neither did Carrot Top, and we haven't even gotten to the bottom of that.
Oh, look, it's connecting. Pat, listen, John Tesh is on the line. Oh, he's shirtless. You're by a pool. Look, John Tesh, you look very attractive. You look very sexy. It's not the first time John Tesh has seen him shirtless. Hold on a second. I'm going to put you on with Mike. John Tesh wants to talk to you. He doesn't believe I have your phone number. Okay, give me a second. Well, we're on the air, sort of. It's a podcast. I'm taping it. I don't want to put you on the air right now. I just want Mike to grab the phone so that I can do this. Put the music on hold real quick because John Tesh doesn't believe I know you. Just real quick. Hold on a second. He's shirtless. He's so red and leathery. He is right by the pool doing, you know, God knows what game show, Wheel of Fortune things. He does. Where is he? That's ridiculous. Hold on just a second, John, and bear with us. I'm sorry for wasting your time this way, but I don't know the Pat Sajak stories.
I want to ask him about one of the stories, I also want to say that, and this is actually in the book, but the first day I showed up at WSM, and this was in 74, Pat was a monster on the air in Nashville. He had a radio show, and I don't know if people realize, they remember the Pat Sajak show, but I'm not sure if people realize how darn funny he is. You know, I mean, he was hilarious doing the weather and also on his daily radio show. But on the first day that I was scared to death. I was coming from Orlando and I came in for an audition and Sajak was there with a guy named Dan Miller. And And again, I mentioned this in the book, and Pat was, he was so sweet to me. He was really nice. I mean, you know, it's sort of when somebody comes in, you know, dressed up onto a news set, A, people start worrying about their jobs, and B, it's like the new dog at the dog park, right? You get that image in your head. You know, everybody's, they sort of sniffing around, you know, anxious to know if there's any fear in the air.
He's a good guy. Sajak is a sweet, sweet man. And people don't have any idea how great he is at television, because that talk show should have had a great deal of success because of what you're saying, how funny he is. But, Pat, what the hell are you doing? You are red. You are leathery. You answered poolside where? Where are you calling us from?
First of all, John, whatever happened to you?
I know, exactly, right? That's why I'm calling these guys. I've got plenty of free time.
Oh, I always do that. When I near the end of my Rolodex, I see Levitard and then I jump on. And I'll explain later what a Rolodex is, Dan. I'm at my pool at my palatial estate in Southern California. That's where I am.
Okay.
Pat, listen, I just want to tell you that I actually just finished writing. Well, it's a book that came out this week, and a lot of the book is about me in my early days at in the news business. And I was writing about the first time I met you when I came to do the audition at WSM with Dan Miller, and I was sort of I was nervous, and I was like, I was telling these guys I was like the new dog at the dog park, you know. And you were so, I don't know if you remember this, and I may have talked to you at Dan's funeral about this, but you were so kind to me, and you were really great.
Well, I was really annoyed with you because you were such a good looking guy. I thought there was any shot I had at any woman staff, I'm done.
So tall, he's 6'6", so tall, Sajak, so, you know, tall.
I know. He really was, and I assume still is. We had a pretty good. We had something removed that. Well, that's another story.
Yeah.
I've been, John. Obviously, I've been following your career, and it's been great to see what you've done, and obviously your travails as well. And apparently, things are good, right?
Things are really good. But Jeff, I have to ask you, and I don't want to embarrass you, but I never saw this, but Miller. So Dan Miller anchored the news with Pat for many years, and I was sort of the guy that they hired in case Dan, because, you know, both these guys, Dan and Pat, everybody was looking at them to come and work at these giant stations out of Nashville. So they hired me as sort of the utility guy in case somebody left, you know. Did you end up when Dan was talking to you about you should do your, I think you should do the show in a clown suit or something, did you end up taping a segment where you were completely naked on the doing the weather? Did that happen, or was that just Dan lying?
No, I never did a naked segment. I don't think I may have done a clown suit. It sounds like something that may have happened in the after having wine between weathercasts. But I don't recall. I don't recall either one of those. But Dan, as you know,
I know what it was. Wait. I know what it was. He had told you that you should wear a suit. And then the next night you wore a clown suit is what he told me. So it may have been lore, whatever.
You know what? I think, you know what? Now that I think about it, and I remember the kind of person I was in terms of management, I did a newscast one night, and I think I went casual. I wore a sweater or something, and I got this, you know, this thing from on high telling me I need to wear a suit. So the next night I
right.
Or a clown suit, and somehow I kept my job.
We've wasted enough of Sajak's time. Pat, get out of here. Thank you for answering our calls. Your life looks wonderful. It really, like, what a gig you got, Sajak, laying out by the pool instead of having to go to that warehouse with that wheel like 17 times a year. What a gig you've got, dude.
First of all, it's over 20. Secondly, be sure John gets my number and have him call me sometime.
All right. Take care.
Oh, that's awesome. Pat, thanks for your time, buddy.
Absolutely. Good talking, Dan. Take care.
All right. Likewise, Pat. All right. Now, help me out with this, John, because Bob Costas has now relayed word, okay? He's texting me, and he says, because Mike Ryan was texting him while we were talking. So just to recap for the people listening, I am sitting here talking to John Tesh, and we conference called Pat Sajak, and in the middle of it, I was distracted and couldn't hear what you guys were saying because I was texting Bob Costas. to squash the beef that you have with him. So
really appealing to that podcast demo, Dan.
In 1993, John, do you realize this would have been the height of fame in 1993? You, Pat Sajak, and Bob Costas making a call to our little radio show, we would have been an international sensation.
Well, I think it'll be an international sensation to people over 65. I really do.
We are crushing those people don't listen to podcasts, though, because honest to God, if my father were listening to podcasts, he would be amazed at what's happening right now, where we are talking to Sajak and John Tesh and Bob Costas and 1993 all at the same time. So this is what I've said.
Go ahead.
This is what I've said to Bob Costas. Need you on radio. John Tesh wants to squash beef. And then Mike Ryan grabbed the phone and wrote, taping a podcast with him right now, and he wants to put your beef behind. I had no idea you had beef. Are you available now? And he says, I wish I was. Please give John my best. It's all good in my book. He's a nice guy. And I respond, we can relay a message. We want the beef to continue. We want you to escalate it. And so he says, I'm shocked. I think he might be genuinely surprised that you guys had beef. I think he might not remember that you guys had, because he's saying, I'm shocked.
Oh, if you have beef with a 6'6" angry John Tesh, you know about it.
John, what do you want me to write him back? Because this would be the perfect way to end it and to publicize his new book, Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith. It's available wherever books are sold. I believe that this is going to be news. I believe that John Tesh and Bob Costas feuding is wonderful for my business.
I know what I'm rooting for John Tesh's response.
I want John Tesh to hit Bob Costas with you f*** off Bob Costas. Like, I want this, and I'm sorry because I know you're a man of God, and I know you didn't like my cursing before when I said your shit still slaps,
but comedically,
you saying, John Tesh saying, you know, f*** off Bob Costas, would be a wonderful way to end this. But Mike, how do you want me to respond to Bob Costas?
I want John Tesh to respond how John Tesh wants to.
I want you to send this message to Bob, please. Bob Costas, I love you. I still think Brett Musburger is number one, but I love you, and let's squash the beef forever.
And also tell Bob that he can find Relentless wherever books are sold.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. You made a nice
I got your back. You gave me, are you kidding? John Tesh, you gave me the right surround ball rock. You're a god.
So I love you. I still think Brent Musburger is better than you as a broadcaster, I think that might escalate the beef. But I want to squash the beef.
And Relentless is available wherever books are sold.
Okay. But I want to squash the beef, and Relentless is available.
Give it the full title, Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose.
Come on, Mike, I'm busy. All right, like, come on, I got to do this.
You got the rights around ball rock.
All right, Relentless. All right, hold on a second, John, hold on. Relentless, Unleashing a Life, Jesus.
Of Purpose, Grit, and Faith.
I've got deep vein thrombosis from sitting down too long. Are you guys done yet? Oh my God.
We can send him a copy. And tell Bob we'll send him a copy.
Grit and Faith is available now. Forgive me. Hold on, John.
Yeah, I think he was telling us kindly that he needs to go.
Okay, I don't blame him, but all right. But I need the payoff of this. All right. The new book, Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith. It's available wherever books are sold. I guess I'll let you go, John, and now we'll find out what Bob... We need your numbers so that we can tell you what Bob says, okay?
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, guys.
I don't know that he loved being a prop for what we were doing there.
I think we lost him towards the end, but it's legally binding. He gave us his permission to use this song.
Okay, all right. I have now texted, though, Bob Costas, and I'm sitting here amid this music, and I've
written him. We're going to handle this in post.
He says, I love you. I still think Brent Musburger is better than you as a broadcaster, but I want to squash the beef, and Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith is available now.
What if he does the thing for a payoff? What if he does the thing where he just gives it a thumbs up? Because that's not great.
No, but how
Although
do I...
Although I love that invention.
Well, now I'm just staring at it, waiting for bubbles. I'm staring at my iPhone, waiting for bubbles here. I don't know whether it'll be funny or not. Oh, I got bubbles. I got bubbles.
All right, I'm going to hit play again.
All right. So this is in response to he says, I love you. I still think Brent Musburger is better than you as a broadcaster, but I want to squash the beef and Relentless. Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith is available now.
And we're still on Bubbles?
Yes, we're still on Bubbles. Hold on, man. Hold on.
Oh, it's a long one. It's a long text.
He seems like the kind of guy who would be clever by text, right? Mm-hmm. Like he would be good and polished about what is, because Bob Costas is also exceptional at television. Like the idea of these late night shows.
I mean, he's no John Tesh.
He's of being funny.
We're Team Tesh, just so you know.
How great was this? Honest to God. Now, it would have been greater in 1993, admittedly.
Yeah. This is like Jason Williams was a very powerful and emotional South Beach session. But damn if this isn't better.
I mean, this is flabbergasting what's happened here for people. I've lost the Bubbles.
No.
I've lost the Bubbles. He's disappeared on the Bubbles.
All right, now you got beef with Bob Costas.
No.
Say, I saw you typing with Bubbles.
You want me to say that?
I saw the Bubbles.
All right, you want.
I'm recording a podcast. Right. I need a payoff.
All right. All right, fine.
I saw the Bubbles, Bob.
I saw the Bubbles, Bob.
Don't you ghost me. Because now you can have beef with one Dan Lebatard.
Ghost me.
And I'll hit you over the head with a copy of John Tesh's Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith.
All right, I'm writing all that. Just let the music keep playing. Okay, so I've written back. Hold on a second. I've written back, okay? Thank you. This is where he escalated it.
Uh-oh.
Bob Costas escalated it. Look at this. This is the payoff you wanted. Are you ready? This is good. This is good.
Am I ready for what Bob Costas in the year 2020 has to say in response to John Tesh?
To the beef we didn't know he had and a beef we may now have with John Tesh. I wrote to him. I saw the Bubbles, Bob. Don't ghost me. You don't want beef with Dan Lebatard. I'll hit you over the head with a copy of Relentless, Unleashing a Life of Purpose, Grit, and Faith. I'm taping a podcast. I need a payoff. You know how this shit works. Bob Costas writes, yeah, well, when it comes to hosting entertainment news shows, he's no Mario Lopez. Then who is?
That's very true. I mean, I think we can all agree.
I think that's back. I think now Bob Costas has beef with Mario Lopez. He's insulting. But we're skewing younger.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, skewing younger. Mario Lopez.
Yeah, Mario Lopez is in his 40s. So I think we fixed the issues with this one podcast.
All right. So thank you for listening for 50 minutes. Thanks to John Tesh for not being too annoyed with us. Hopefully he does not sue us because we have used this song again and again. He's angry at us. I will now give you Pat Sajak's number.